This is Pat Dunning with Happy Talk. I would like to introduce you to some of the visual artists of our area. There are so many of us with really interesting stories about our creations and so few opportunities to be heard. I hope I can convince many of you to visit with me on the air. This Pioneer 90.1 radio interview is made possible by the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund. I have Inez Mostu with me today, and she makes such interesting creations that I want to let her talk about her art form. Inez, can you tell me where you were born and where you grew up?
I was born on a farm at Holt, Minnesota. I was born in the house. And my parents were older. My mother was 40 when I was born. My dad was about 46. And let's see, what else was I going to say? I was an only child. And so I had to learn to amuse myself. I'd always be drawing or doing something all the time.
Mm-hmm. What was Holt like when you were born and growing up?
Holt was a bigger town at that time. We had a bank. We had two very nice stores, mercantile stores. And we had three restaurants and a bar, a barber shop. So in a newspaper, weekly newspaper. So it's hard to believe there isn't anything left up there. My father was a mail carrier, rural mail carrier, and he used horses to begin with to make the rounds. His route was 30 miles. Later he put tracks on a Model T and a Model A later, and so that was the first snowmobiles in this area.
What did you do as a child to entertain yourself?
Well, mostly I just, I had cousins, second cousins who lived across the road, and we didn't have cell phones, or we had a telephone, but they didn't have one, and so we'd just walk across the road and run around, and we'd build playhouses in the woods, and I had a pair of skis, and we'd ski on the straw stack, so we thought that was quite a hill. Then we kept horses or cattle in a pasture, and we'd ride our bicycles there and grab the cow's tails and ride along. So we had a miniature fair going. We'd make our own rides and everything, and we had a lot of fun.
Then as you were growing up, what kind of extra things did you do besides your regular schooling?
Well, we would go into Holt quite a bit in the evening. Sometimes they had what they called medicine shows in the summer, and we would go there and go to those shows every night. And then they had old-time gospel tabernacle or tent shows, they called them, and we would go to those. We belonged to a Lutheran church, but we always attended those tent shows. The music was good, and we'd see our neighbors there.
Did you know anyone that made things by hand?
Well, everybody made some things. They crocheted. They would knit. My father always said he would like to have been an artist, but he would draw. He liked to draw horses, and he did shadow figures on the wall. But he didn't have the money to go to art school, and that's probably why I became interested in, and I think that's why he wanted me to go on to college and major in art.
And where did you go to school?
I went to 1 year at Crookston at the agricultural school there, but they didn't offer much in art. We had sewing and cooking and things that would help you on the farm. At Concordia, then I studied art. We had a lady teacher the first year I was there. Her style of art was, she did a lot of floral paintings, a lot of it, and my next year's teacher was a man. He had graduated from Yale. His wife had also graduated from Yale, and he was into more bold type painting. He liked landscapes too, and he was a friend of Grant Wood. Grant Wood was influenced so much by he was influenced so much by Grant Wood's style. We learned a lot from him.
Well, now, how did you get to Thief River?
Well, we'd take, when I went to school in Crookston, we would take the Galloping Goose, what it was called. That was on the Great Northern. And then I would ride as far as Holt and get off, and then my father would meet me, and we lived 3 miles from the depot. And that train was always late, and it was a miserable ride, just a short while. Then when I went to Moorhead, the train also ran from Moorhead, so I took that same train. And sometimes there were students there from Middle River, and I would ride with them. We'd share rides. One of the Engelsteads from Thief River lived in Moorhead, and he would give me rides once in a while at Christmas.
And how did you meet George?
I worked for the Larson Floral Company, and Larson's had a flower shop in the front of their store. They had a music store in the back part. It's where Wells Fargo is located now. In the back, they sold washing machines. And then my husband was a close friend of one of the Larsons, of Milton Larson, and I met George through that. Then George decided he was going to buy the greenhouse. So he bought the greenhouse, and then he asked the Larsons if they would be willing to sell the floral end of it. So they did. I went with him then to the new shop. That was where Schoberg's is located now on North Main. And we were there for a year, and then we moved over to where we were for 30-some years. And that was across from where Thrifty White is now, next to the VFW. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And then I took courses when I was working for Larson's. I went to a floral school in Chicago, because the Larson wives had Milton's and Justice's wives. No, Ekron's, a sister-in-law, Lucille Ekron, and the Milton Larson's wife went to that floral school in Chicago, and they learned a lot, and they wanted me to go there, so I went there. And then after that, and George and I were married after a year or so after we moved into that other flower shop.
Inez, can you tell me how you got started making your dolls?
Yes, I would like to talk about a friend I had in Roseau. Mrs. Hildall at Roseau was an expert on them. When I was first married, I met her through Hazel Halgrim, who was the head librarian here, and they were friends. And we would go to Roseau to visit this lady and her husband, and they had arrived from Norway not too many years before. She was making a little nisse, and she made them of wool. The faces were wool, and she had red caps. And this was right after World War II, And she made them and sold them to make money to send to help the war effort in Norway. And she had family there, and she always sent the money back there. She bought clothing and shipped over there. And then she always had many stories about the Nissa, and about, she knew everything about folklore. And she was a natural born storyteller, and she would tell us stories always about Norway and the trolls and the Nissa. And when I grew up, I didn't know what a Nissa was. My parents never mentioned anything about folklore in Norway. So this was really interesting for me. And then I started making dolls, but I didn't want to copy hers. I made Nissa using paper mache. I would make the whole body of paper mache at one time, and the faces, I couldn't get any detail to the faces, but they still resembled a Nissa. And then they came out with clay, with a polyester clay, which was easy to work with, and that's what when I really got started making the dolls. And I suppose I have made probably thousands of the Nissa. But then I made some dolls and brought to Sue Fredin. She had an antique shop and a drapery shop on North Dewey. And Gretchen Beidle came into this store, and she saw I'd made a vignette of an old couple at Christmas. I called it Christmas in Holt. And then I had one other one, too, of an old couple, a comic. I like to do comics because we made a trip to Sweden, and I bought a lot of postcards, and they were all comic, all funny. So I would use them to go by, and I would make these little vignettes. And well, they weren't so little, they were pretty good sized, but Gretchen bought one for the bank. And then I thought, well, maybe I should start selling, try to sell them. Then Jean Michalek, who owned the both of us, the gift shop and the tea room, had a very nice Christmas craft sale in her home, the house that's owned by Marty Collins now. And we had a really successful sale there, and then I really got started working. But I had to work in the flower shop, too, and so I spent a lot of nights working on the dolls. But it was fun, always fun.
Can you talk a little bit about the materials that you used to make the dolls and their clothes?
Well, I went from paper mache to the polyester clay, and then I don't crochet or knit. And I found I met a lady at a doll show in Grand Forks, and she was from North Dakota. And she did beautiful knitting. She was a perfectionist. So I asked if she would make caps for my dolls. And she said she would be happy to do that. So that started her making caps and mittens. And then I went to another craft exhibit, and I found a lady from Brainerd who makes mittens, Norwegian mittens. And I started ordering from her. And pretty soon I had people all over that I would have do piecework for me. They made, I did buy shoes, Norwegian, or not Norwegian, but Dutch wooden shoes from a place that sells bulbs, tulip bulbs in Holland. And I'd order from them, and I also made the shoes from the clay. You can buy this polyester clay in any color, so you don't have to mix the colors anymore. As far as wiring, I was stumped. I didn't know how to wire the bodies. I had a friend who came here to work in the flower shop, and he was a designer. We'd get together in the evenings, he and his wife. They were very artistic, and I made witches to start with, because I figure if a witch turns out really ugly, it's still a witch. So he showed me how to wire the dolls, and then from then on, well, then they got to, some of them got to be pretty big, and it's hard on my hands, this wiring, because the wires are stiff to make them stand. And that's why I named them. I called it Muratua, and that means anthill, and that refers to the number of people that would make things for me. My husband would make the little wooden tables, and he made the chairs, and then I found a man in Bemidji that made kick sleds, more they call them sparks, and he had a stroke now, so I can't get any more of them. People don't want to do that small work anymore. And the lady who did the caps has lost her eyesight, so it's getting to be harder to find people to do that work for me.
Are you working on something right now?
Yes, I'm working on trolls. And I found that I didn't think people would like trolls that much. I made some dolls for the bazaar at Trinity, and I had a couple trolls, and everybody seemed to want trolls. So now I'm pretty much into trolls instead of Nyssa. But then they say, don't forget about the Nyssa.
Okay, now explain the difference between a Nyssa and a troll.
Well, a Nyssa is a good guy, and then the troll is a bad person. And the troll is usually very ugly. He has long nose and warts and pretty much like a witch. You can make most anything out of clay and call it a troll. But the Nyssa has a kinder face, but they can be mean too. So you can make, but they never have that long ugly nose or big ears like the troll.
Now, are the Nyssa and the troll out and about all the time, according to Norwegian lore, or is this just a Christmas thing, or what is the deal there?
No, they seem to be out and about all the time. They live in the barns. The Nyssa lives in the barns and takes care of the cattle, and the troll, they live in the woods up in the mountains and hide in the trees, and they're dangerous. Some of the trolls have tails. And they say when a troll enters a church, he drops his tail, he loses his tail. Mm-hmm. So
was the story about Billy Goat Gruff, is that a Norwegian tale?
Yes, that is. Mm-hmm. That's from, there are many books that you can buy in Norway that tell us all these Norwegian tales. And Mrs. Hildal at Rosa was an expert on them. But I concentrated more on the making of them rather than the folklore.
Inez, can you talk about how you get set up here in your room to create one of your Nyssa or your trolls?
Well, first of all, I assemble the wire. I put wire into the head and put a ball of clay around it, and then I form the face. I probably will make six at a time or so. Then they are good enough to let me use the oven in the kitchenette. And I take the heads, I put the heads on a glass dish, and I put them in the oven out here at 275 degrees. And I bake them for 30 minutes. Then I take them out to cool. And from there on, I take a wire and form the hands. and put them on the glass dish. Then last of all, I will mold the shoes, and the clay comes in brown or black, or mold the shoes. And for the trolls, I make bare feet, and they look pretty gruesome on the plates. I take them in and put them in the oven here, and sometimes the girls will open the oven and there it's full of bare feet and hands, and they say, "Well, what's that?" After that, after they've cooled, then I form the armature. I have to use quite a heavy wire, so that's hard on my hands, and I'm getting some arthritis in my hands. But I'll form the wire, and then I take paper towels and wrap around the wire with the yarn. Then I wrap the legs and the arms and everything, and then I use paper towels to form the body. And then they're ready for dressing. And the Nissa is always dressed in gray and with red yarn for the legs and a red cap. So you don't have to decide what you're going to do. But when you make a lady, like an immigrant or something, that takes a long time because you have to decide what she's going to wear and what expression she's going to have, and what she should have on her head and what kind of hair she should have. So they take a long time to make. And I have hair. I buy the hair at Michael's and Grand Forks, and I have that in every color, but mostly black or gray. But I have red hair. And the beard, Dr. Thorsgaard was a good customer of mine, and he liked the Nissa. That was his favorite. But he would always say, "It's not a Nissa unless you put a beard on him." So sometimes I'd make a Nissa without the whiskers, and then he wouldn't buy it until I add the beard. And he was a good Norwegian. He really, really enjoyed everything about the Scandinavian Nissa. In Sweden, they're called tomta. They look exactly the same. And in Finland, it's a tonto. And Denmark, it's a Nissa there, same as Norway.
Well, this has been a delightful afternoon, Inez. Thank you so much for visiting with me. I always wondered how you put your creations together, and sometime I hope that you invite me over to watch one of these sessions where you assemble everything. Thank you so much, Inez.